Welcome to the Small Batch edition of Pop Culture Happy Hour, NPR's podcast about what we're watching, reading, and listening to. I'm Stephen Thompson, a writer and editor with NPR Music, and I'm joined here by Glenn Weldon, who writes about books and comic books for NPR's website. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Stephen.
So the reason we're here, on Friday, March 13th, TBS will wrap up its third and hopefully not final season of King of the Nerds, a reality television show you and I both watch. Mm-hmm. You actually got my son into this show, and he in turn has created a household of King of the Nerds nerds.
There you go.
So thanks a lot for that. Why don't you, as the person who planted the seed of our enthusiasm, tell us a little bit about this show?
Well, this is in the tradition of an old reality television show called Beauty and the Geek, and that was about getting nerds and women who were very, very pretty, if not necessarily intellectual powerhouses, together to work on teams. And that was really about, can we get these nerds to talk to gals? This is more about putting two teams of nerds together in a house and pitting them against each other in challenges that are specifically nerd-based. And it's more about the group dynamic. And it's more, it's the kind of reality television show that I never watch because it's about interpersonal dynamics and strategy, two things I hate. And this is really about having them vote each other in and off certain teams and voting in each other up for elimination and that kind of stuff. It's very Survivor-esque, except with nerds.
You have the two teams, and they compete in a general challenge, and then the losing team, two members of that team, are pitted against each other in the nerd-off.
The great nerd-off.
At the end of the end of each episode. And so those two players, one is nominated by the losing team and one is nominated by the winning team.
Yep.
That's, to me, where you have the biggest structural flaw in a show that I really, really like, which is that you wind up pitting a power player against a goat.
Sure.
The losing team nominates its goat. The winning team nominates the player it would most like to see sent home from the losing team. And so, over the course of the season, you skim off the top and the bottom, and at the end, you're left with kind of a middle-of-the-road person.
Well, yeah, you can remind me, because I watched every season of the show, but I remember almost nothing about it. Has the alliance dynamic been quite so central as it is this season? Because it is very central this season.
Yeah, we're coming to the end of the third season. This is the first season where you had cross team alliances, where you and it's a little bit more of a nerd clique, which is a real thing. You've also had on several seasons of the show, like at least one nerd bully, which is also a real thing.
Yeah,
but the nerd clique is a little bit more of a thing.
This is why I think I'm not liking the season as much as I have in the past, because when you see the kind of interpersonal dynamic of the nerd clique voting other people out, I mean, when you see that happen on a show like Survivor or any other reality show where it's, you know, beautiful, toned, orange-skinned pharmaceutical reps and actors slash singers. And it's like, okay, you do that. You guys invented that. That's what you do. You did that to me in high school. To see nerds doing it to each other feels weird. It feels like they're you're using the tactics of the enemy against each other. You know what
I mean? But I mean, at the same time, I think that the, like I said before, you still have elements of that stuff in nerd culture. I've been in enough nerd communities over the years to see nerds picking on other nerds. There's still a pecking order among nerds. There is still the least popular LARPer. There is still the furry where the other furries are like, get a load of that guy.
Absolutely. But that's the thing. In the members of the so-called Secret Six, which is the central nerd clique here, Stephen, it's a lot like the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants versus the X-Men. In the X-Men, with some exceptions, you have...
We're qualified to have this discussion.
In the X-Men, you have mutants who could pass for human. By and large, there's significant exceptions there. And in the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, you have mutants who couldn't.
Right.
And what you have in the Secret Six are nerds who could pass for normals in the outside world.
Yes.
And what you have outside the Secret Six are really people who couldn't.
And I do think that's a little bit of a fundamental casting challenge for a show like this, is you cast very telegenic people. And you have the way that this show is laid out. It is defining nerds as people who should probably be socially awkward.
Sure.
And so you have like a NASA engineer up against a LARPer, up against a brony, up against a perfectly telegenic and normal asshole woman whose little nameplate says Amanda. Bookworm.
Yeah.
And like, that's like three quarters of our audience.
I know. You know? What they all share, however, is something that some nerds don't. They are practitioners of a kind of heedless branch of nerdery. They lack the gene for self-consciousness because of, obviously, they're on a television show.
Right.
In me, the gene for self-consciousness is overexpressed and upregulated. And so when they are called upon to do something like sing or dance or act or LARP for that matter, I get this empathetic embarrassment.
Right.
They are comfortable in their skin. More power to them, bully for them. I can't watch those things.
I mean, yeah, you're not necessarily, they're not going to cast a strain of non-performative nerds.
Sure.
So on a more macro scale about this show, what do you think of the hosts?
Oh, sure. You've got Curtis Armstrong and Robert Carradine. It's basically you have two different kinds of nerd. You've got the Curtis Armstrong performative theater geek kind of nerd, and Robert Carradine, who is a little bit more low-key. They're great. They're part of the deal. They walk the walk and talk the talk.
Well, and they're veterans of Revenge of the Nerds, as you said when you first told me about this show, that's the show's mindset of what a nerd is.
Exactly. They still have these kids posing with slide rules. So, yeah.
You know, there's one person who brings in the fact that he's a Pokemon master, and that is how he competes, versus somebody who is, like, literally a rocket scientist.
Yeah.
It's definition of what nerd skills can be applied to become King of the Nerds. It ebbs and flows what skills come in handy.
And you still have people getting the villain edit. You've got Caitlin, who is going through this thing with a, I'm the best, I'm the smartest, these people must bow before me, which is a very nerd thing.
Sure.
I mean, when you are bullied or victimized as a kid for being a nerd, you can go in the superhero direction, which is, I'm going to make it better for everybody. Mm-hmm. Or you can go in the, I will destroy you with my mind kind of way. And some of these people, and in past seasons, there have certainly been brainiacs who feel like they're going to tower over them and people will quake before my puny fools.
Oh, sure. You had the second season, which was just dominated by this kid who could not be destroyed. I mean, this is a season where, particularly once you get to like the top seven, I really don't dislike any of these people, which is my favorite kind of reality TV. I don't necessarily need to see a raging villain last the entire season. I enjoy this show.
Yep.
I especially enjoy the fact that my kids enjoy this show.
Mm-hmm.
It's sometimes a little ratings challenge. There's always question about whether it's going to be renewed.
Sure.
I, for one, hope it lasts and lasts.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
King of the Nerds.
King of the Nerds.
All right. Full episodes of Pop Culture Happy Hour are available every Friday on iTunes or from your favorite podcast provider or at npr.org. Thank you, Glenn.
Thank you.